is the Criminal Law Revision Commission, Subcommittee Number 2, 9:30 a.m., October 22, 1969, Room 315, Capitol Building. Today's subject, amendments to Sexual Offenses Preliminary Draft Number 2, Prostitution and Related Offenses Preliminary Draft Number 1, Criminal Homicide Preliminary Draft Number 1.
Let me comment. One of the two things that caused me to consider this, I don't know whether I'm in favor of it or not, two things. The first thing is, as Don had indicated, so far my sense of the public concern is in the 16 to 18 year old bracket. Less concern about the adult. In other words, we're saying sexually, a person becomes an adult when they reach the age of 16. You can have, in effect, if this is adopted and we don't make any other change in our body of law, you can have, you're totally free sexually at 16. Can't vote for another 2 years. You can't get married without mom's permission for another, actually, 5 years. Can't get married without mom's permission for another 5 years. It's all right to fornicate, young man. But you can't get married unless you get mom's permission for 5 years. You can't drink for 5 years. You can't smoke tobacco for 2. Inconsistency. But, of course, we have Representative Frost's statement that consistency is the hobgoblin of small minds. So I'm mindful that perhaps one should not just cling to a tenet because it's consistent. But my feeling is this, that I think that we ought to be moving both in voting and contracts and whole bag to an age of majority at 18. If you disagree with that, then you can move in any direction you care to move. If, on the other hand, you agree with that, then we do have this difference between 16 and 18. It's covered now vaguely under fornication. I have not yet found a conviction or a prosecution in Marion County for fornication. Perhaps all the time in Hood River County or Multnomah County or whatever. A rare crime, a rarely prosecuted crime, a frequent crime perhaps, but rarely prosecuted. So the question is, can we cover this age by adopting a section such as the sexual misconduct with a minor? So what we're saying is that up until you're 18, the state is going to control you as far as your sexual activities and make some things a crime and some things not a crime. Of course, they would go under the juvenile code for better or for worse in this area. Or do we just stop at 16 as the present law does, sans fornication, and leave this unstructured here, no crime? I think it has obvious effect both in heterosexual activity and also homosexual activity. And I personally found that this is where those, and I explained to Don, I don't know how truthful these people are with themselves. They may be seizing upon this as the best example of the law, but this is where they zero in on permitting homosexuality between 2 16-year-old boys. Permitting it. Oh, wait, I'm not charging them a crime.
Well, I might add, in approaching this...
Can I ask a question, Don, before you start? On the proposed draft you handed us, says a person commits a crime, being a male, such and such. We're talking about a person of what age?
Well, we would be talking, in this instance, of a person over 21.
Over 21.
Because of our section on defenses, which I think should apply to this section as it does to our other sections in our draft, which would make it an affirmative defense if the defendant were less than 3 years older than the victim, you see. So we'd be a little more lenient in that respect than the present fornication statute is. I see no reason why your defense shouldn't apply to this as well as it does to a 16-year-old.
That's a good
point. So then, Wally, what you said then, actually, we're saying all sexual conduct, even if this were adopted, between people under the age of 21 and over the age of 16 is going to be, is not going to be a crime, consensual.
No. Well, this added defense I had not considered, but I think perhaps that's true. And I haven't really thought that through, but no, the age of freedom I intended to be 18. Now, if we apply the three-year defense, then that allows a defense up to 21. In other words, if the girl is 18, the boy has a three-year defense, so he can be as much as 21 and raise the defense.
But for rape, it would be 19, you see. For third-degree rape, which would be the next statute. Greater offense, yes, third-degree stat rape, which is 16 under our draft, he'd have to be within 3 years. So if he's over 19,
or he's 19,
or you know, whatever it happens to be, if she's, say she's 15 and a half and he's 19, he's not going to have the defense. See. But what a couple things I tried to keep in mind in drafting this, and it takes in, as you can see, it would take in a male victim also. And the reason I did it that way was that I had in mind State versus Hodges, which decimated the CTDM statute. And there's language in there, certainly in the dissenting opinion, which would indicate that the rest of that statute probably isn't any better off than the section that they pulled out and declared unconstitutional, because the rest of it isn't any more specific than the part that they declared unconstitutional. I looked at that, and I looked at House Bill 1897, which was passed the last session, this so-called corruption of, or seduction of,
Carson fondling bill.
And it seemed to me that even without this section you have before you, we've got the bases pretty well covered with respect to the kind of activity that House Bill 1897 covers in our present draft. When you look at our sexual abuse sections, most of that is picked up. There's some language in there. For example, if he lewdly fondles or manipulates the private parts of a child under the age of 18, or who induces or permits a child under 18 to fondle or manipulate that person's private parts. Well, sexual abuse would cover that if the victim is under 16. And other language in that is, or who by threats, commands, or persuasion endeavors to induce any child to commit any crime. Well, we have a section in Professor Platt's Inchoate Crimes article on solicitation, which would, I think, cover any age individual who, where the defendant had solicited that person to commit a crime. Or to participate in any act of sexual perversion with himself or another person. Here again, if the child's under 16, we'd have it covered, I think. But so this section you have before you would be complementary, and that's to the extent that it does cover males under the age of 18, who are covered now under our CTDM statute, supposedly. But this, I didn't label this as rape or anything like that. I felt something less innocuous might be in order. The Model Penal Code has a section called corruption of minors. I think, yeah, so corruption of minors is the language they use.
Well, John, if we briefly stated it then, as I understand it, that what this proposal would do then would be to raise the age of sexual maturity from 16 to 18, basically. As far as adults, if we extend the three-year defense, then as long as the so-called experimentation area is still, you know, there's two 17-year, contrary to what I stated, two 16-year-olds, two 17-year-olds, two late 18 or within 3 years would not be in violation of this.
No,
statute.
They wouldn't, no.
But a 45-year-old man, if he forces or seduces a 15-year-old girl, would be subject to statutory rape. If he seduces a 16-year-old girl, no problem, because that's no crime, right, under our proposal. if we adopted this, he would be guilty of sexual misconduct with a minor.
Yes.
Until she reaches age 18.
Yes. Do you have a comment, Catherine? Well,
no, I think it was restated, and that is the three-year defense seemed to me to leave you with a situation where you may not have erased the question about the two 16-year-old boys.
Yes, yes.
And you alluded to that later, so.
Yeah. Although I think the chances there are less, there's less of a chance of that, and perhaps the seriousness of that in a society sense is much less than the 45-year-old man and the 16-year-old boy. I overstated my case, because I had not, when I talked with Don, I had not thought, I just hadn't approached the question of the defense being raised, but I'm so convinced that defense is good that you've got me between a rock and a hard place. So
well, in the other cases, I think,
yes.
I agree, it's much more difficult.
Now, even at that, this proposal you have before you does not go as far as the Model Penal Code does. They are more liberal in their corruption of minors. They have a section.
What you say, more conservative? It means a lot to Harl. Which way you
say? I don't even know where I am in this.
They have a section 213.3 called Corruption of Minors and Seduction. And it provides a male who has sexual intercourse with a female, not his wife. Of course, our definition of female encompasses that. But or any person who engages in deviant sexual intercourse or causes another to engage in deviant sexual intercourse is guilty of an offense if, and there you still need a person less than 16, a victim, and a defendant who's at least 4 years older than the victim. Or you have to have a guardianship situation where the victim is less than 21 years old and the actor is his guardian or otherwise responsible.
Can you find that out at the county courthouse?
And then they have another section in there covering people who are in custody of the law or of an institution. And then a further section, really a seduction section, induced to participate by promise of marriage. So,
Don. The Model Penal Code then does not fix the age of consensual sexual conduct at 18. It remains at 16, the Model Penal Code.
Yeah, 16 for that and 10 for rape.
All right. Are there any, what's the prevailing situation in the states today, the enlightened states, as far as the age of consent?
Well, I'll get out my handy dandy chart here, and you should have, I think that we sent each of you on this subcommittee a copy of this. I don't remember. I thought we did, but.
I got one.
For example, New York, their basic, their third degree rape, their lowest degree of rape, the victim has to be 17, so they're a year higher than ours. Michigan is 16 for third degree rape. Connecticut is 16 for third degree rape. Illinois is 14 for rape, statutory rape. The Iowa bar proposal is 14. Another one that isn't on here, I noticed Texas has an age of 14.
So we're going the opposite direction.
In a sense, we are. And I hate to use this word again, conservative. I mean, we're more conservative in our ages that we have than most of the other states, with the exception of New York.
The thing that worries me about it is I can see what it's intended to get at. I don't think anybody has any quarrel with the 45-year-old man and the 16 or 17-year-old girl. You can. The Errol Flynn, Beverly Adlander situation, perhaps. But if I read this correctly, you have a almost an 18-year-old girl who could be halfway through her freshman year of college, and her 21-year-old fiancé, who's a junior or maybe a sophomore in college, or a freshman having completed his military service, and which thing is a matter of state policy, if those two people engage in sexual intercourse, it's going to be a crime. I don't know, it bothers me. We say it's perfectly all right, really. I think we acknowledge that they can marry. A girl can marry at 18, can't
she? That's right. But not until 18.
Without her parents' consent.
Yes, oh yeah, she can marry at 16.
But she can't even have sexual intercourse with her parents' consent, is what we're proposing. Saying you can enter into matrimony, but you can't.
Well, you can't without your parents' consent.
No, but with the parents' consent you can marry, but even with the parents' consent you can't engage in sexual intercourse.
None of my kids have asked me that question.
No, I don't think they will.
You've got a problem.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me know what your answer is going to be, Kevin, see if you get asked. Well, I think your point's well taken, Harl, but...
And we're going completely the opposite direction. The most recent, from what I understand from Don, the most recent revisions of penal codes is kind of taken.
Well, on that point, impliedly, I think that some parents do give approval, at least in the sense that there are many, quite a few girls under 18 who are provided birth control means by their mothers.
Well, there is the same difference that I don't draw any comfort from that. I don't disagree with what you stated, but I do. The same thing the public is, some of the public, a very small number, are drawing to us and saying by changing law we're condoning this activity. I pity the poor parent. She may be providing the daughter birth control pills, but the words condone, approve, permit are words showing perhaps willing participation. And that doesn't necessarily follow maybe what we are called realistic, enlightened,
liberal.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, right.
I suppose it's a question of what Oregon's ready for in this area. I don't personally feel that this section I've drafted that you have here this morning, I don't think it adds anything particularly to our draft. And I'm personally not in favor of it, but at the same time, I think this is certainly the one thing that we have received the most criticism about so far with respect to our approach to sex offenses is on this question of the age of the victim. And I think that, surprisingly, that the number of people who are criticizing this think it's 18 now for the age of consent. I've gotten that impression from talking to some of the people on the telephone and the calls we've had here, that they're surprised when I tell them, well, that's the age of consent now for statutory rape is 16, and they don't, you know, they thought it was higher than that. I certainly wouldn't propose that we increase the age for statutory rape to 18.
No.
But this would give us another alternative, someplace to pick up some of this other conduct that now you've got to consider this, that you may not have a statutory rape situation involving a girl over 16 now, but you may have a contrib, or at least you would have had a contrib in the old days. But I'm not so sure what you have now. Probably nothing. Except, you would have possibly a fornication if somebody wanted to prosecute somebody for fornication. But that's an infrequently used statute, as Wally said. In fact, the last case we could find, the Oregon Reports, was dated 1925. So, there may have been some prosecutions since then around the state, but certainly... been few and far between.
You're nice to know that hasn't gone on in this state since 1925.
Yeah, well, he stamped it out.
Yeah.
But,
my problem is this. I think quite practically, or quite candidly, I think what I'm being persuaded by is the fact that this is the one area, as Don said, that the people that have talked to me have zeroed in on. I think elsewhere in our revisions, we have adhered to the academic, enlightened, straightforward criminal law approach, whatever is best. But frankly, I'm concerned that we may lose the battle, and there we've got, to me, much more enlightened areas of doing away with many of the old crimes, that perhaps we ought to let the legislature soften the blow, make this, perhaps this is a political judgment rather than an academic judgment. But it seems to me that if we can temper the, if we can satisfy the responsible public of Oregon by a statute such as this, the cost, and I see no cost, although Don and Harl have indicated a little hesitancy in this area, if we can satisfy the realistic or responsible public with this one, I think we have served the revision well. But perhaps this is a matter for Judiciary Committee in 1971 and not for this this committee.
Well, I'm sure they'll have hearings on that.
Oh yes, indeed.
Well, no, I don't have any.
Of course, maybe there's some other approach that the subcommittee could suggest that we take in this area. This is just a one alternative.
Would it be a misdemeanor to use?
Well, that's what I would think. I mean, I would think that when we come to grading these, that this would be graded as a misdemeanor rather than a felony or even indictable misdemeanor. I think it should be a straight misdemeanor. But
well, I move the adoption in a second.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? It's been moved and seconded this be adopted. Okay. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Carry.
Now, Mr. Chairman, do you want to go ahead and discuss these other two sections on sex offenses also?
Yeah. Now, be my purpose to have this distributed in the books for. Not distributed, that's a bad word. Available for the next meeting where this will be discussed.
You mean the next...
full commission meeting.
Yeah, now we have a tentative agenda that does not include sex offenses for the next meeting, but we can certainly be flexible with the agenda in that regard. What I think we ought to do, if depending on what you do with these other two sections also, we can prepare a preliminary draft number 3 and have the whole thing ready in one package for the commission on the 7th.
Okay, let's do it that way. All right, lewd solicitation.
Roger, why don't you go ahead and cover these two since you drafted them.
You
might give them the background of where these came from. And
well, we had originally been working on an article called Public Indecency. And by the time we got finished with it, we found we only had 4 sections. Yeah. And 2 of the sections related to conduct similar to disorderly conduct, and 2 of the sections, which are the 2 that we're looking at this morning, really relate to sex offenses. So we thought that these 4 sections could be moved into the other 2 articles, and that we could do away with the article on public indecency. Now I notice in both of these sections, lewd solicitation, public indecency, we use the term public place.
Yeah.
Now public place is defined
where?
In another article, in riot disorderly conduct.
Why don't I just read, the public place means a place to which the general public has access and includes, but is not limited to, hallway, lobbies, and other parts of apartment houses and hotels not constituting rooms or apartments designed for actual residence, in highways, streets, schools, and places of amusement, parks, playgrounds, and premises used in connection with public passenger transportation.
So with that definition in mind, lewd solicitation. A person commits the crime of lewd solicitation if, while in a public place, he solicits another person to engage in deviant sexual intercourse. And deviant sexual intercourse is defined in the sexual offenses article.
Is this intended to, I don't think it does, but correct me if I'm wrong, Roger, but is it intended to deal with just lesbianism and homosexuality? I think it covers, the definition of deviant sexual intercourse covers conduct between peoples of the opposite sex too, doesn't it?
Well, yes. Actually, deviant sexual intercourse would most ordinarily be found in situations involving homosexuality, but not necessarily.
Our definition of deviant sexual intercourse means sexual conduct between persons not married to each other, consisting of contact between the sex organs of one person and the mouth or anus of another.
Of course, what this statute is aimed at is really not so much at the act itself, but at the conduct of public solicitation.
The restroom at the Y, or the Y, or the hotel, or the
bus
the restroom at Bush Pasture and that kind of stuff.
Right.
I notice in the summary they point out in the California case that indicate that regardless of how private the proposition is communicated, if it's communicated in a public place, it can still be punishable.
That's what that case said. I mentioned in the commentary that it's not intended to reach purely private conversations between people that haven't established intimacy. It would seem to me that in those cases you're never going to get a prosecution or a problem anyway.
Well, I was thinking,
but if, because there I don't know, between people that haven't established intimacy, whether you have an actual solicitation or not.
What do you mean by establishing intimacy? What is that?
People that have known each other in the past, friends. Because taken literally, this statute could apply to that.
Well, I, of course, this is all new to me, but I'm in the Marion Hotel, and I'm having a drink with somebody, and he says, "Say, I've got a bottle up in my room." And we go up to the room. We just cover that.
And then
I had no idea until I got up there.
If he tells you what he has in mind.
Yeah, but after he gets up there, after we get up.
He didn't solicit you on the...
And then it wouldn't be against the law to solicit me that way, huh?
Not in his room, no.
Well, let me ask this.
That's crazy.
You take the problem you have there, because if you extend it to private areas like that, any type of solicitation made in your own living room would be covered.
Right. What they're trying to get at is that if the two consenting adults, and they don't shout it, let's say homosexuality, two homosexuals, it's a crime to solicit each other, say, in the Marion Hotel bar, but unless they make a disturbance, there's not going to be anybody, I had a phrase but I won't use it, turning themselves into the police.
Are we going to eventually, it'd really be interesting in this area to, are we going to have someone, we're going to have hearings on this, someone testify that knows the present general accepted practices of human sexual conduct. Here we get a deal, as I understand it, we're saying public policy, we feel that sexual conduct between consenting adults is no place for the government to have their nose.
Private consensual.
We said private consensual conduct.
Yeah. So the conduct that's being punished here is not the sexual.
No. We're just saying here that the public has a right to be left alone from these type of solicitations when they're in a public place.
Carry on with Ken. In other words, they're trying to get at the solicitation, apart from the crime, but the guy, the homosexual, going around the bar propositioning all the guys at the bar. They're saying you can't do that. Now, if two homosexuals go up into the room and have their private activity, then there is no crime. But the solicitation is the part that becomes...
But if he gets a little smarter with his solicitation, then he's all right.
Well, if nobody's offended, then they're...
Well, I might be grossly offended after I got up there and realized what was going on. I might be a boy from the country, which I am.
Well, yeah, one might say, well, we should extend it to private, but then as Roger pointed out, then you've got to... The question is, do we just ignore solicitation and let it go? Or do we... And that's somewhat arbitrary, because, good heavens, you read the definition of public place,
Well, I think you also have to presume that a person exercises some judgment when they meet a stranger in a bar and agree to go to his room for a drink.
Well, there's a big difference between what is objectionable and what is illegal. There's a lot of things that we don't like and we don't want to put up with, and we don't, but it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to make it a crime.
Well, of course, I think one thing we have to consider, too. Now, we have, in effect, legalized homosexuality between adults, in private, though. Now, one of the objections, I think, that we should anticipate will be leveled at that is this public solicitation problem that, well, if we're saying this is legal, we're going to have the parade of the horribles brought before us about all these terrible things that are going to take place in the parks and in public restrooms and in bars and other places, that maybe the public, maybe members of the public aren't going to be solicited, but they're going to be offended by what is taking place between lesbians or homosexuals of one sort or another in trying to make pickups in public and this kind of thing. And this is, I think this is one answer to it. And this is something we'd considered when we first started into this sexual offenses article, was this kind of thing. We felt all along we would have an article in our public indecency, or a section in our public indecency article that would cover this kind of thing. But after we got into that article, we found, well, we only have a four-section article anyway, and maybe this more logically belongs here, right with the sex offenses. Although in a sense it is not a sex offense, it doesn't contemplate completed sexual intercourse. It's not an element of the crime or deviant sexual intercourse, but it's a question of outraging public indecency and this kind of thing. Of course, I agree with you. That's a policy question. Whether you think this is the kind of thing that should continue to be covered. I think, as Roger points out in his comment here, that this kind of conduct could be covered now under our vagrancy statute.
That's assuming the constitutionality of the...
Yeah, assuming.
I don't know how widespread the problem would be. I hadn't really thought about that point Don brought up, that in the sense that consensual adult heterosexual activity is not prohibited now, and there is a certain amount of solicitation in public places, men soliciting women, for example. Whether if you legalize consensual homosexual activity, if homosexuals would become much more active in public in soliciting men.
Oh, I think this is
I think perhaps that might be a problem.
Yeah.
Better be big and tough.
Yeah. Big club.
Well, a recent to-do before the Portland City Council and the particular difficulty of one block in the city of Portland has become apparently kind of the block in which solicitations occur.
Mm-hmm. Right across from the courthouse.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
Yes, they're around 3rd and...
by the park?
Across from Nels Peterson's office.
And there has been a reaction by the Portland City Police saying that they have a great deal of difficulty trying to regulate this because they... I guess the Portland City vagrancy ordinance has hit the fan, so they aren't getting any convictions, so they aren't taking anybody in under it, and they seem to have a feeling they haven't got much to fall back on in the way of ordinance power, at least their existing ordinance power, to regulate.
You read the letter of the editor from the police officer on that. He says it's ridiculous, the law is. He has a simple solution, that if a gal standing there and you know that she's soliciting, you arrest her and she's convicted. Yes, a very simple.
Was his name Sims? Well,
he said, no, that's, he wrote a scathing letter to the Argonian. He asked too much for us to prove that she's actually soliciting. So we know she is. And that ought to be enough.
We can tell.
Well, I understand the Journal received some letters from the ladies in question indicating that they felt that really this should be a matter of public regulation, that they should be subject to such regulation and thereby protected from these types of criticisms.
You didn't want to end up stating it's a hard enough way to make a living anyway?
Yeah.
Exactly.
As everybody knows. Yeah, it's been in letters yet.
I haven't seen any of those guys.
Gracie Peck was on the program.
Yeah.
TV one night for quite a while on this.
Gracie's point was that remember the same point she made during the session when we went. Well, that mandatory sentence on the
procures.
The procurers.
And she, her point again was the same, that a lot of the gals getting out of Hillcrest automatically gravitate to Third and Salmon there, and these guys get hold of them. And that's what she felt was going on. But the girls who wrote the letters to the editor said that wasn't true. They didn't know anyone under 21. Well, I don't know. I don't have any.
Well, is there a consensus? I mean, I grant you we're being arbitrary in this area, but it's kind of difficult to draw a line between public and private. If we permit it in private, then it's just a matter of how far we want to extend it. And I see a real danger in allowing open solicitation of this type of activity in public places. I think this is one of the most offensive things that's going on right now, as a matter of fact, the YMCA and restrooms. And
yeah, well, it would seem that this type of statute is going to have to almost be enforced by undercover vice squad work.
Now you haven't worked.
Well, I don't know whether that's necessarily the case.
But it seems to me that if the police get complaints on this type of activity, that they're going to send vice squad people in. I mean, this statute is almost identical to a prostitution solicitation statute as far as how it works.
Of course you have, well,
the Jenkins route.
Although I would imagine they would get some complaints from citizens who have been solicited also.
Yeah, or citizens who could see other people being mm-hmm. solicited see what's going on.
This problem is somewhat narrow in larger cities like Portland, because there are only a small number of bars in Portland that are known to cater to homosexuals. And the police generally leave them alone. In other words, they like to, at least they know where they are and they can keep track of them. And any non-homosexual that would happen to drop in for a drink, it's fairly obvious in a short period of time that he's in the wrong place, and they generally leave.
Well, there's a certain amount of assumption
out.
Of risk.
I was going to say.
You have to appreciate it.
But, you know, I don't think that the more discreet kind of solicitation that would take place in a bar would be any more subject to harassment or prosecution or interference by the police than they are right now. I mean, like you say, those people now are pretty well left alone. I mean, they know where they go. I mean, these are the common hangouts for deviants.
Particularly when we remove the other end and the act is no crime. Then, you know, the would seem to me the solicitation would be the one that they now would try to nail because the act is extremely difficult to come on to. Perhaps it's arbitrary, but I don't see any great danger in anything like that. Any other comments? One of you want to move the approval of?
I will.
Okay. Senator Drinstead moves approval of lewd solicitation. Mr. Hawes?
Harl's
are we recording seconds?
Morning.
Are we recording
no,
seconds?
No seconds.
Okay, you're off the hook, Harl. Hold it. Don't commit yourself.
I'm saying anything.
Okay. It's been moved that we add the draft on lewd solicitation as written. Any other comment? Those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Beg your pardon?
Record my vote.
Okay. It's public indeed. He's going to think about it.
Wherever it is.
Yeah. Can you put it right on the line? Public indecency.
This is a crime.
We use the term public place in this section also. A person commits the crime of public indecency if while in or in view of a public place he performs, one, an act of sexual intercourse, two, an act of deviant sexual intercourse, or three, an act of exposing his genitals with the intent of arousing the sexual desire of himself or another person. One and two are types of sexual conduct that really amount to a form of disorderly conduct. Three, we have a statute on now, which is, I can never remember, indecent exposure.
Roger, do you remember the case we all had in law school where the guy in the boys' dorm was undressing and some gal was walking by, he was on the ground floor and failed to pull his drapes. She charged him, and if I recall correctly, he was convicted for indecent exposure because of the word, or similar words, in view of.
Yeah, that's why we have redefined, really, the crime, because the exposing the genitals in itself would not be a crime unless you can prove an intent of arousing the sexual desire. In other words, the accidental, the negligent act would not be a crime.
Okay, yeah, but how about the, the accidental or negligent, I'm dressing in my room, and somebody walks by. Now, maybe I'm not as modest as somebody else is, but that's my business if I'm in my own home or in my apartment. And how about committing an act of sexual intercourse? One perhaps might want to pull the drapes, but if he does not, I don't know, that in view of...
I just quickly get a little personal experience here, and I'll shut up, but I wonder what would happen. I darn near wrecked a truck once on the Columbia River Highway because there was a stretch there where you could drive along and parallel the train, and I was just happened to be about the same speed the train was, and the gal was dressing in the morning. She thought she was way out in the wilderness.
Was it one day?
That underpass?
One of our meetings said that
the damn tunnel came.
Show you how unreasonable the law is in this area. That if you have a situation where a man stands in front of his bedroom window with the shades up and undresses, he can be charged would be charged for indecent exposure. If there's a woman outside who happens to see this, but on the other hand, if a woman does this, and a man is outside the window to view this, then the man is charged with being a peeping Tom.
Beautiful.
That's what we call equality under the law.
That's true. And this statute only, this one here, Roger, just applies to the males, doesn't it?
Yeah, that was my next question.
You mean sub 3?
Sub 3.
No, it wasn't intended to.
Well, can we do anything about making it that way?
Yeah.
No, this would
like Don that. Mentioned, I brought that up before. He thought the reason that you wouldn't have any problem in that area because you'd never have a complaint.
That's
Well, this would also. This would not. Let's move to Bullfrog 4 or Woodstock. This wouldn't touch it, would it? Because it's not a public place.
Bullfrog
4, the rock festivals.
Yeah, that'd be a public place under our definition.
How so?
But general public has access, same as a theater.
40 acres near Ashland? Okay.
Places, amusement, parks, playgrounds.
Well, this would certainly eliminate certain types of plays ever appearing in the state of Oregon.
Well, actually, we discussed that too. I mentioned that yesterday. It seems like number 1 and 2 wouldn't apply because even in the most avant-garde plays, I think they are simulated acts. And number 3, I think you could argue that, you could argue both sides, perhaps, sure. But that the act isn't done with the intent of arousing the sexual desire of the audience.
Artistic outlet.
Right. Now, I'm sure there are some plays, perhaps, in New York that may argue both sides of that.
This would be the only statute we'll have available other than trespass or something else on the rock festivals, right?
Yeah, I can't think of anything else that we've either drafted or have thought about cover any of that kind of activity.
This has nothing to do with being married or not married, does it?
No.
Man and a wife, state park, camping, by themselves, sleeping bags, a tent, and have sexual intercourse.
Well, of course, this isn't directed at the participants. It's directed at the public at large who are offended by the sight of it.
Well, but this says not only they don't necessarily have to be in view, do they?
They're in a public place or in view of?
In a public
place. Oh, I see what you mean. So if they're in the tent, of course.
I don't know.
I don't think in a tent in a park is considered a public place.
Well, run over that definition of public place.
Public place means a place to which the general public has access and includes, but is not limited to, hallways, lobbies, and other parts of apartment houses and hotels, not constituting rooms or apartments designed for actual residence, and highways, streets, schools, places of amusements, parks, playgrounds, and premises used in connection with public passenger transportation.
I think a tent would be so close to the apartment house bed that you could the actual abode. Now, Carl asked what a just sleeping bag. I think they're in public view then. So.
I would think so too if they're in a public place.
George, do you have any comment on this? Kathleen?
But your objection to some extent was perhaps that we should have the intent of an intent on one and two also.
Well, I realize that, I don't know. I just, that case has always haunted me where Harold touches them. Goals or objectives or objections, I should say, and crimes are two different things. And I'm concerned that we don't condone public indecency, but on the other hand, as Don pointed out, that it's so much in the mind of the viewer. And I could, I just see these little old ladies standing on their tiptoes, peering into some guy's dormitory, and then going turn him in for undressing in view of the public. And they had to get on a box to view it.
Of course, you do have a great number of prosecutions in this state now under your indecent exposure statute. I mean, this is a widely used statute. A good many cases every year in the state occur with respect to...
How many of Maryland are alcoholics as opposed to sexual deviants? So.
Well, I don't know that. I know we, in Lane County, for example, we had, we probably had... two or three of these a month. And you have a lot of recidivism here. Because one of the problems, and I think this was talked about in passing at our, we talked about the indecent exposure and as well as the Peeping Tom. We had our meeting with respect to responsibility. There was some discussion about that then. It was brought up that these are people who are very difficult to treat as far as psychiatry is concerned. Wasn't that the testimony that we had? That
yeah, they're impossible. They just can't cure them. They don't know what's wrong. They know what's wrong. They just can't deal with it.
And although
they're not
the
dangerous type of individuals, though, generally.
No, they're not. No, they and
very, they don't go on to bigger things. Like
no, right. I mean, I think it's a fallacy some people hold that this is sort of a stepping stone that they graduate on to. Attacking children and raping, and that this is usually not the case. That they, this is an outlet for them, and this satisfies their sexual urge or psychological urges or whatever it happens to be. And they're compulsive individuals. I can recall a couple of trials where we had testimony from a psychiatrist involving a defendant charged with indecent exposure, where the testimony was the fact that. This particular defendant would react under periods of stress. He had an argument with his wife, or things weren't going well with the officer. Any number of reasons would set him off to do this sort of thing. So, and the only reason I bring this up, in fact, this is a widely used statute in this state, I think, it's not only a question of policy so much as it is a question of continuing to provide some coverage for this area that we do have covered in our present law. I think that it would be more difficult for the state to make out a case under this draft because you have the intent requirement there of arousing a sexual desire.
One relieving himself along the highway, presently, is that not indecent exposure?
Yeah.
But under this, it would not be.
Right. This wouldn't make it illegal if a police officer should come upon a young couple parked, engaged in premarital petting at a favorite parking spot.
No, because we don't use the word sexual contact.
Well, I mean, but if the man or the woman was exposed with the intent of arousing the sexual desires of his partner, what we're saying is a lot of conduct, but you just gotta...
Well, read literally, this might reach that, but I doubt if it would ever be used in that context.
I think it could be, to answer your question. I think that...
While a car itself is a private place, it's most often in view of a public place.
That's a big park or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll move the adoption.
Okay. I'm saying Haas moves the adoption of the new section on public indecency. Any further discussion?
This wording includes both male or female.
It does, as we understand it.
All right.
The his.
So, well, your general statutes, wouldn't they cover that, Kathleen? Now, I mean, this would include when you use his or hers, or a person includes female and male both.
Of course, genitals does not include breasts, does it? Don't we have a case on that?
The word is not defined to include breasts, no.
So the female would have to be almost all but nude, then. The his would be the statutory his that would refer to his or her. Right?
Yeah, but of course, under our disorderly conduct, bare-breasted woman in public probably would be covered.
Not under public indecency, though.
No, but under disorderly conduct.
No. Okay, all right, any further questions? All those in favor of adopting public indecency statute indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay.
I said aye.
Okay, I just...
I move.
Yeah, well, I'm on to that kind of stuff. Okay, where are we going now?
Well... Move on to prostitution.
Oh, neato. Hey, fellas, as soon as we get this done, we get to go into gun registration. So, hustle on to this.
And I wasn't, we had another subcommittee meeting the last time the subcommittee met, so I didn't sit
in. Oh, you
in
didn't
on
get in? Oh,
I don't know how far you are.
We didn't accomplish anything.
We had a lot of fun.
We talked a lot and argued a lot.
Okay, Roger.
Well, I'll very quickly recap what we went through in our last meeting on the area of prostitution. We discussed the Section 1, the definitions, but made no changes but didn't approve it. We decided to come back to it after we looked at the other sections. Section 2, the basic prostitution statute, was tentatively approved. The vote wasn't taken. And when the meeting ended, we were discussing Section number 3 on page 12, which is the statute on patronizing a prostitute.
You can't be an enterprising prostitute unless you have somebody else working with you.
I have to leave around 3 o'clock this afternoon. I wonder if we could just let this one shoot.
Go
we'll get
on
up
there.
Later and we can go on.
I'm going to go on to gun registration.
Now, I had a couple comments to make to begin with in connection with this patronizing a prostitute. Attorney General Johnson was interested in just how many convictions on prostitution emanated from vice squad activity. This is a book called Detection of Crime by Tiffany. page 215, they discuss police practices in the area of prostitution. I'm quoting, "Because of the nature of prostitution, there is no victim, in the usual sense of the word, who is willing to testify against the prostitute. In addition, the prostitute takes care to operate in such a way that those citizens who might make a report to the police will not observe the conduct which constitutes prostitution offense. As a consequence, to convict a prostitute, a police officer must pose as a man to be solicited so that he can testify from his own knowledge that the prostitution's solicitation has occurred," which would seem to indicate that just about all prostitution convictions are based upon testimony from police officers. Now, in connection with Section 3, patronizing prostitutes, the Kinsey Report, published in 1948 on the Mail, his statistics showed that 69% of the total male population in the United States has had some experience with prostitution. So if we're talking, if we're discussing a patronizing a prostitute statute, we have to consider the fact that at least the Kinsey statistics would show that 69% of the adult male population in the United States has committed that offense at least one time in their lives. The only other question I had is that on Section 3, a person commits the crime of patronizing a prostitute if he, one, pays or offers to pay a fee to engage in sexual conduct with a prostitute, and we have defined a prostitute in Section 1 as a male or female person who engages in sexual conduct for a fee. My question would be, could you ever get a conviction on the testimony of a vice squad officer taking this statute literally if the state had to prove that the payment or the offer of the fee was made to a prostitute, since the vice squad officer himself would not be a prostitute, but would only be posing as a prostitute? Movement in the law, one I'm not too keen on. Illinois has enacted one, New York enacted one, Connecticut's enacted one, Michigan has proposed one, but of course their revision has not passed. They had problems. And California has proposed one, but, and it has not yet been passed.
Taking as a fact what you read us about how you necessary police action procurement of conviction in this area, this general area. If we had a statute on patronizing a prostitute, we could pretty well then plan on the fact that we're going to have police women being utilized for that service.
Well, it would seem logical to me that'd be the case, because I really can't imagine many prostitutes filing complaints against potential patrons.
I don't think you can. Unless, is this what you're saying, that you'd have to prove that the vice female vice squad officer in fact is a prostitute?
Well, I just raised that question. Don didn't seem to think it might not be a problem, and I just don't know whether, as one of the elements of the offense, the state would have to prove that the offer, there was a fee offered to engage in sex with a prostitute, and we've defined prostitute. Because what perhaps in effect we want to say is with a prostitute or a person that the patron thinks is a prostitute.
Well, I don't know, maybe it'll work out. The federal government uses narcotic addicts, the special employees. Maybe we'll get to the point where the state would utilize the professional prostitutes for the purpose of arresting people
as informants,
their services.
It's conceivable.
Roger, do you have any information on states that have this existing in their... Whether it can be prosecuted? I mean, I heard you read your projections of those, but we don't have any feedback yet.
No, of course, the Connecticut code is brand new. Michigan hadn't passed. The New York has a patronizing statute, but the latest advance sheet doesn't show any cases that have gone up on it. I suppose the only way you get that type of information is some kind of direct contact with the New York City Vice Squad people to see whether it has been used much, many arrests made under it. I suspect very few arrests have been made the notice in the commentary, of course, while New York and Michigan both have this type of thing, the experts in the field of criminal law are very critical of it. An article by Morris Foskow criticizing the New York statute, and then an article by Mr. B.J. George criticizing the Michigan statute. Of course, George was instrumental, of course, in drafting a lot of the Michigan code himself, but he wasn't in favor of that statute.
Gold coin, section 3.
Now, as far as number 2, sub 2 of section 3 is concerned, we have a statute similar to that at the present time and have had for many, many years. This is the old type of statute being found in a body house, in or about.
What statute is that, Roger? We got it out here, set out here.
Set out on page, it's one of those listed on page 22.
Looks like it's on page 19.
Oh yeah, is it
167.015?
Have we approved sections 1 and 2 on any of
them?
Any comments, Arlie?
I'm moved we don't approve section 3 reverse order.
Okay, delete section 3 would be, I guess, not be the thing. Okay, could I presume from that you, are you striking at both 1 and 2 or just 1?
Both.
In other words, not to replace the patronizing a body house with another statute, eliminating that as a crime.
Well, in connection with number 2, frankly, those statutes were passed many years ago at a time when the major problem in the area of prostitution were houses of prostitution and body houses.
Right.
You get
times have changed. Yeah, times have changed now, and while prostitution may be just as active, it doesn't center in the same situs that it used to.
I think the DA in Multnomah County also has brought public nuisance suits up there, I guess.
Yeah, we have a state chapter on an abatement procedure for houses of prostitution.
Okay.
But I don't know of a house of prostitution that's been raided in this state in many, many years.
Don, do you have any comments at all on the gold coin?
Well, I don't know what your previous discussion was on this, but I know that this generated a lot of heat in the ALI when they were discussing this problem, and there's certainly things to be said on both sides. I don't know. My feeling has been that we say it's illegal to be a prostitute, but it isn't illegal to patronize. And it's okay to buy, but not to sell. I don't know whether this is a problem from an enforcement standpoint or not. I noticed some of the discussion they had in the ALI minutes indicate that they thought that such a section would inhibit the prosecution, since you'd make police officers guilty. But I mean, that kind of an objection, if that is a problem, I think you could overcome that easily enough. justification type of statute, you know, exempting police officers. You have a similar statute now with respect to narcotics. And so I think it really comes down to this.
Of course, then we have a solicitation statute also.
Yeah, we do have a solicitation statute. Yeah, do you think that would cover this, George?
The man?
Would this cover the man? Yeah. Under your recorded crimes?
Well,
if he actively solicited rather than accepting a solicitation.
It would, assuming the... Is this prostitution a misdemeanor?
Yeah,
probably a violation.
It would still cover it.
I would assume
commission, unless the commission decides to eliminate misdemeanors from solicitation, some states have. But I think it would cover it. Solicitation to a crime.
That's a good thought.
Could we get...
There are some parallel situations that aren't quite parallel, but I'm thinking of the situation with respect to statutory rape. Case law tells us that the female who consents to statutory rape may not be prosecuted for conspiracy or her own statutory rape. It's a crime that she's agreed to commit. Yet she is in the protected class. The statute is designed to protect predominantly. But we don't have that situation here. We're not trying to protect the man particularly, so there's no reason why he couldn't be made guilty as a part of it, as a paying customer or as a solicitor.
Could the commentary, when you get around to it, specifically reflect the thought that this is intended to be that encompassing? Because I would not have, of course, I'm not that up on inchoate crimes, but I would not have immediately seen the relationship until you explained
it. With respect to the prostitution problem?
Yes, if we drop, for instance, the motion before us is to eliminate patronizing a prostitute as a crime. And the question then comes up, does it come under your soliciting statute? And as I understand, both you and Don, your answer would be yes, it does. Well, if that's the case, then...
The only problem I could see there, perhaps on the grading, most of the states that have adopted a patronizing statute have graded it as their least serious offense, what you'd call like New York's violation. Terminology we've been using, petty misdemeanor. In New York, for example, it's the maximum is 15 days in jail.
If you treat it as solicitation, it would step up the penalty.
But solicitation would be a more serious offense.
Misdemeanor.
So therefore, your patron would be subject to a more serious offense than with the prostitute.
Well, no, I think you're jumping to conclusions. I don't anticipate that we're going to grade prostitution as a violation.
No, I wouldn't think so.
As a misdemeanor.
Yeah, I think it would be graded as a misdemeanor.
Then there wouldn't be any problem.
The Model Penal Code says that one who patronizes is guilty only of a violation. Isn't that correct? Is it going to be a violation here? It doesn't say.
Well, I think that's what Roger had in mind.
If you treat it as solicitation, then it becomes the penalty equivalent of the crime soliciting, which is a misdemeanor. Which perhaps you don't want to do, because that would step it up, of course, above violation.
There's a lot of disparity, really, in the states that have adopted it. California suggested petty misdemeanor. Illinois, 6 months. They give the penalty and don't give it a name. New York, a violation. Michigan, Class B misdemeanor. Connecticut, Class A misdemeanor.
Well, I think that the Model Penal Code and these other states have gone... have adopted a similar section, have done so because they rejected the idea of having a double standard, that they felt it was hypocritical for the state to prohibit prostitution, but to say it isn't prohibited to patronize a prostitute.
Well, then the clear, what I'm trying to, if we, I'm trying to get my own mind, if we eliminate this, then those of us who would prefer to have not the double standard, but the patronizing be a crime, can rest assured that it will be a crime under the soliciting.
And as George points out, it would be a more serious crime than if we
left it here
and provided in our grading that it was a violation. Say, because
Okay, but the only motion before us is to delete Section 3 from preliminary draft number 1. Any further comments? George, you have any other thoughts?
No, you've already adopted the prostitution section, I guess, haven't you?
No, I don't know. Sections 1 and 2? No, we're going back.
I just wanted to ask a question. Does anybody actually know how much police business is devoted to prostitution?
Well,
sporadic, usually, isn't it?
Yeah, and of course, it's centered in
Portland
in this day, certainly,
capital.
And most of it has been not under the state statutes, but through their ordinances is where they've tried to handle the problem.
I'm without taking a position on the substantive issue of whether prostitution should be an offense or not, I've always been uncomfortable when you think about the impact that the crime of prostitution has on the police, not just the society in general. There are a lot of bad things that this does to a police department. First, it perhaps takes energy for a sumptuary crime, that is, where everybody's a happy consenting partner. And secondly, I don't know whether you have read this case of State versus Perry or Perry versus State, which is cited, I'm sure, here somewhere, where the question was, what's a common prostitute?
Yeah.
Well, not the issue there that bothers me, but the testimony of a policeman at the trial in proving the act of prostitution. Mm-hmm. Now this really, I think, is a serious problem. He went all but to bed with the woman. He was exposed, washed private areas and all this sort of thing. We're putting police into a situation that can't be anything but condemned by the public in the very act of enforcing the law. And it troubles me that we would do this. And psychiatrists tell us, for instance, that on vice squads, that the activity that vice squads are engaged in, repression of homosexual activities and prostitution, draws to it the kind of people in the police department who have these repressed desires. Just as a natural course of event, they tend to gravitate to this kind of law enforcement, which is bad too, for obvious reasons. So I'm just, I suppose, thinking out loud again, like we were doing in the commission the other day, and pointing out some things that, aside from society, the impact that this may have on the police that I think is very undesirable to make it a crime. Besides the energy, and one wonders how useful it is to sporadically shut the houses down or run the girls off the street.
George, you're addressing yourself to the whole area of prostitution?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Well, I think your points are well taken.
Can't you imagine what that police officer, if he's a family man, says to his son when he says, "Daddy, what do you do for a living?"
Actually, even under the vagrancy statute in the prior case, and the police don't have to go that far. They generally do because it builds a stronger case.
And one wonders if
the fact in that case, he went as far as he
could. If psychiatrists have any grounds at all, perhaps these officers go that far because they want to, not because they have to. And this is, I don't know whether that's true. I'm just suggesting what the imprecise field of psychiatry tells us about human activities and motives. That we could be drawing the wrong kind of people to vice squads and putting them in situations which can't reflect too well on the police in general.
Well, I don't know that there's any answer to that, because in these areas where you're talking about really victimless crimes, if you're going to get complaints and go after prosecutions, it's about the only way it can be done.
Well, I think you have to examine what your alternatives are, though. If you don't have statutes prohibiting prostitution, should you have statutes controlling it? Do you want to go into that kind of a situation, or you just want to take it off the books altogether and see what happens? Now, I think it was Hawaii tried the control approach without too much success, apparently.
Apparently it's not very successful. I should think it'd be more abusive than the out-and-out prohibition.
But, I mean, there were arguments made there to the effect that, well, that this would reduce sex offenses and some other more violent crimes.
and that if they could control the houses, that their, the VD rate would go down. But none of these things came to pass. I mean, they didn't experience any reduction in sex offenses, and the VD rate went up.
And Hawaii had certain advantages, being a isolated state. You have a different problem if Oregon were to legalize prostitution, at least get rid of all the laws, where you were contiguous to 49 states where it was still illegal. I don't know if you would get a lot of
for a tourist trade, though, new people.
Another question, probably, I mean, which would be, looking at the police again, which would be better for the police department? No law banning prostitution or a law banning prostitution, with respect to which system produces the most opportunity for graft or corruption? It seems to me that if you have no ban on prostitution, that the chances of the shakedown are much less. But I could be wrong about that. In other words, there'd be a sort of a prophylactic effect on the police department. If in fact there's an inclination to take money from the girls each week, not to enforce the law.
Of course, that's perhaps true with a number of these other crimes that are against society, as such, as opposed to the violent crimes, whether it be bookmaking, whatever. The argument could be made that without the ban,
that's right.
And I think it's a valid argument.
Any subsidiary offense, like that.
Well, let's. I think we can dispose of three, not ultimately, because it'll be back again, I suspect, when George brings the draft and inchoate crimes back. We'll have to face it then, whether we want to include this. Would that not be the appropriate time to have it out on that issue, whether or not we want to include the exclude that from the crime?
Yeah, we'd certainly want to discuss it in connection with inchoate crimes.
Okay, well, let's vote on the motion before us is deleting Section 3. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Carried. Okay, Raj, do you want to go back to 1, or should we run barefoot through 4, 5, 6, 7, 8?
Well, as far as number 1 is concerned, we've got 4... definitions, 2 of which we haven't come to yet, 3 and 4, place of prostitution and prostitution enterprise.
I'm going to have to go for about 10 minutes and I'll be back shortly, so we can either take a break or...
Oh, why don't we just take a break.
Okay, let's take a break.